first half hour of Issues Etc. We're going to take up a subject we've discussed many times here on the program. The Missouri Stem Cell and Research Cures Initiative. We're going to delve into what it is and what it isn't here in the first half hour with Don Rubin, who's the president of the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures, the organization that's sponsoring this statewide initiative. After our conversation with him, we've got open lines for your questions and your comments. We're going to spend the second hour, the first half of it, with a regular guest and good friend, Pastor David Peterson. We're going to talk about what is baptism. He's pastor of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Following that short conversation, Bishop Andrew Elisa, who is Bishop of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in the Sudan, is going to join us to talk about Christianity in that African country. We're going to spend the third hour with two guests, Pastor Tom Chris. This will be his first time on the program, by the way. I got a chance to meet him recently when I was in West Bend, Wisconsin. He picked me up at the airport. We're going to be talking with him about taking God's name in vain. He's written a very interesting article in the latest issue of Higher Things magazine called Dropping the G-Bomb. And then the last half hour of the program, Vicar Charles Lehman. You've heard him preach here on the program. We actually reviewed one or maybe two of his sermons, one of his sermons. He's also written an article for Higher Things magazine titled A Few Lies Satan Tells About Himself, and that'll be our topic in the last half hour of Issues Etc. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Feel free to join us, and remember, open lines coming up in 25 minutes. Don Rubin has been kind enough to join us. He is president of the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures, the organization that is sponsoring the statewide initiative, the Missouri Stem Cell and Research Cures Initiative. Don, welcome to Issues Etc. Don, welcome. All right, we're getting a little trouble on the line. We will try and restore that with Don Rubin here in just a moment. Some of the questions that lay ahead here, what exactly is the Missouri Stem Cell and Research Cures Initiative? And it says it bans all human cloning. What does it in fact ban? What does it in fact permit? We've talked about it here on the program before. And we've got Don back. Don, welcome.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing fine. We had a rather nasty sound coming from your line just a minute ago.
It was silence on my end.
What is the Missouri Stem Cell and Research and Cures Initiative?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on and giving me the opportunity. The Missouri Stem Cell Research and Cures Initiative is a response to an effort for the last 4 years now where some Missouri politicians have been trying to pass laws that would criminalize some of the most promising types of stem cell research, therapies, and cures, making criminals not only of researchers, but of Missouri patients and their physicians as well. And we believe that is a threat to cures and also a threat to equal treatment for Missourians.
What type of cures, in your terms, what type of cures are being criminalized by these proposed laws?
The proposed laws over the last couple of years would have made criminals out of anyone who participated in, that's the term used, participated in these processes, which would have included physicians, doctors, technicians, anyone who participated in the process. And so the Missouri Stem Cell Initiative ensures that Missouri patients will have access to any federally approved treatments and cures that come from stem cell research.
And what are the processes that that you've mentioned here in particular?
The process is something called SCNT, somatic cell nuclear transfer, which holds out amazing promise. We have every major medical organization in the country, every major patient organization, believes that this is a process that holds, that really presents the new frontier of medicine, holds the potential to cure many diseases that to date have been incurable, like juvenile diabetes, Parkinson's disease, spinal cord injury. And the reason this holds such great promise is that these embryonic stem cells that are created through this process, these stem cells in a lab dish, have the unique capability of regenerating any type of cell or tissue in the human body. And if these can be, these hopefully someday can be used to, for example, in the case of diabetes, where scientists know what causes diabetes. It's a single type of cell that's malfunctioning, that in the pancreas, that fails to produce insulin. if stem cells can be used to replace those with healthy insulin-producing cells, diabetes could be cured. The same thing with Parkinson's disease. Scientists know that Parkinson's disease is the result of a single type of cell in the brain that's failing to produce the protein called dopamine. And if those malfunctioning cells could be replaced with healthy cells, Parkinson's disease could be cured. And that's why the American Diabetes Association, the National Parkinson's Foundation, the Christopher Reeve Paralysis Foundation, and so many patient organizations and scientific organizations around the country and here in Missouri support stem cell research and support the Missouri Stem Cell Initiative.
Don, here's a piece of one of the ads that has been running in Missouri for the Missouri Stem Cell and Research Cures Initiative. I've got a question for you about this.
This voter referendum measure will ensure that Missouri patients have access to any stem cell cures that are allowed under federal law. It will ensure that our medical institutions can provide and help develop those cures. And it resolves the cloning issue by banning any attempt to clone a human being.
All right, that's the piece. Here's my question. It says that it bans any attempt to clone a human being, but isn't somatic cell nuclear transfer cloning itself?
Well, it's cloning of cells. It's not cloning a human being. It's a very important distinction.
Well,
what Missourians want to see banned, Todd, is the cloning of a person. This initiative will not only ban the cloning, but will ban any attempt to clone a baby, a person, a human being in the state of Missouri. What it will allow to go forward, however, is life-saving research in a laboratory dish where, yes, cells are cloned. But you know, Todd, cloning goes on all the time, and I don't think we want to ban all cloning. Cloning of cells, of genes, goes on when we produce insulin to treat diabetes patients, when we clone skin cells to create skin grafts for burn victims. Cloning goes on all the time. What we want to make sure happens is that nobody tries to clone a person in Missouri, and that's what this initiative bans, with very strict criminal penalties for anyone in this state who tries to do that.
But isn't the product, the quote-unquote product of somatic cell nuclear transfer, in fact, a human embryo, not just cells, but a human embryo that, if implanted, at least in theory, would grow to be a child?
Well, every cell in the human body has the entire human genome in that cell. And each of us has tens of trillions of cells in our body. Any one of those cells has the theoretical potential of someday being able to be cloned and turned into a human being.
But the product of somatic cell nuclear transfer, whether you are doing this with the purpose of implanting that embryo in a uterus or extracting the stem cells from that embryo and destroying the embryo itself that's created by somatic cell nuclear transfer is a human embryo, yes or no?
Well, I would say no. The precise use of the term embryo, an embryo is created when typically in the case of natural fertilization, is created when the fertilized egg grows into a blastocyst, and that blastocyst, which is about a 5 or 6 or 7 day old clump of those cells, implants into a uterus. Only upon implantation into a uterus does the process of what's called differentiation take place, which is when these undefined cells begin to turn into blood cells, bone cells, nerve cells. That does not happen outside of the uterus. All we have outside the uterus in the lab dish are undefined cells, blank cells that have not differentiated into anything else.
What is it before it implants? I mean, in the case of natural fertilization, what is that before it implants?
It's called a blastocyst.
It's not an embryo.
It's not technically an embryo under medical definitions.
Well, if you don't mind, the embryology techs seem to disagree. I mean, at least the ones that I've looked at seem to say that the union of the egg and the sperm is the beginning of a human being.
Sure.
You can call it a blastocyst, but it is, in fact, genetically a distinct human being and a human embryo.
Well, it's genetically distinct. I absolutely agree with that. I disagree that it's a human being. When people are asked, "Are you against cloning?" or when people are asked, "What is a human clone or a cloned human being?" people think of a human version of Dolly the sheep, a person, and that is specifically banned in this initiative. The whole point of the initiative is to provide ethical boundaries and at the same time allow life-saving research to go forward. And you'll find that a large majority of Missourians support that. And these are people across all political stripes, all geographic, urban and rural, people of all religious backgrounds, by large majorities support this. And the reason they support it is that over half of Missouri families have someone in their family, a child, a parent, a grandparent, who suffers from one of the diseases or injuries that could someday be treated or cured by stem cell research.
Well, has anything been cured yet with embryonic stem cell research?
Embryonic stem cells is a brand new area of science. Embryonic stem cells were first isolated in 1998, so that's less than 8 years ago. You know, it takes 14 to 15 years for a new drug to be developed. So we're really on the cusp of a new frontier. One wouldn't expect for cures to have been developed yet. But in fact, the science is moving quite quickly, and human trials, there have already been successes in animal models. So Parkinson's disease has been cured in monkeys. Spinal cord injury has been cured in mice and rats.
With embryonic stem cells.
Yes, with embryonic stem cells. And so, for example, right here in the St. Louis at Washington University, the same physician who treated Christopher Reeve, the actor who had a spinal cord injury, that doctor here in St. Louis used embryonic stem cells implanted into a rat who had its spinal cord severed and was unable to pull its body around the cage. After having the stem cells implanted, some weeks later, that rat was able to walk again, almost miraculously. And I think we ought to have the chance to try that with humans, to give people in wheelchairs who are condemned to a wheelchair for the rest of their life the chance to be able to walk again. And that's the kind of hope that this research holds. It's been successful in animal models, and it's expected to begin human trials within the next year on some of these diseases.
We're talking about the Missouri Stem Cell Research Cures Initiative. Don Rubin, the president of the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures, is our guest. This is the organization sponsoring this statewide initiative. In about 10 minutes, open lines for your questions and your comments. All right, so if you define human cloning as somatic cell nuclear transfer and implantation in the womb coming to full term, then this initiative would ban human cloning. But if you define human cloning as the process of somatic cell nuclear transfer, wherein afterwards the embryo is it's cloning for biomedical research, that is not banned by this initiative.
Todd, I think it's important. The labels are less important than people understanding exactly what we're talking about.
Well, no, the labels are very important if the question is whether or not it's ethical to do this kind of research.
Right. I think people need to make the ethical judgment based on a knowledge of what the process is.
But the process is identical whether or not...
Well, let's explain the process.
And the embryo is identical. The result of somatic cell nuclear transfer is identical whether or not you intend to extract stem cells or you intend to implant in a womb. We're still talking about a genetically distinct human embryo at the very earliest stages.
Well, you know, the scientists who cloned Dolly the sheep created almost 300 of these genetically distinct, as you call them, microscopic blastocysts in a laboratory dish. There were no headlines when those 300 were created that a sheep was cloned. It was not until those were successfully implanted into a sheep's uterus and grown into a sheep that it made headlines that a clone had been done. This measure will ban the implantation into a uterus at all. So all you will ever get are these undefined stem cells that have life-saving medical potential.
You will get a human embryo from which you can extract these blank stem cells.
Well, again, I think it's important for people to understand what this is. And what SCNT is, which you know you're describing, what SCNT is, it takes a patient's own skin cell, a single cell from a patient. It takes a donated, unfertilized egg cell from a donor, and it combines the inside of that skin cell with the donated egg cell that's hollowed out. And those two combined are put in a laboratory dish and stimulated with some chemicals and tricked into acting as if they were fertilized, but they've never been fertilized, and it begins to replicate. And after 4 or 5 days, stem cells are created that could be used for life-saving cures and for life-saving research. That's what we're talking about. Now, if someone believes that those cells in a laboratory dish are a human being, they're certainly entitled to that opinion. I have no problem with that at all, and our members have no problem with that. However, those who oppose this research because they believe that those cells in a laboratory dish are the equivalent of a living, breathing child or adult who's suffering with the disease, those individuals have every right to turn their backs on the fruits of this research, but it's simply wrong for them to deny this hope to the rest of us.
But if it is, in fact, taking a life to save a life, isn't that something that should concern everyone?
I think I think so. I think that I think everyone agrees on the ethics. People need to agree, best decide what their philosophical position is. But no one believes we should be taking lives to save lives. But in this case, most people do not believe that those cells in a laboratory dish are a new human life. Are they living human cells? Yes, they're living human cells. But that doesn't make them a new human being.
Well,
and most Missourians don't believe that's a new human being.
All right, so what was I at that stage?
What were you?
Yes, at that stage of development, was I a human being?
Well, you developed going backwards from that process, but you go back even before that as well.
But was I?
You go back to human cells, and you go back to a twinkle in your mother's eye, probably.
But I don't think
we're going to ban twinkles in mother's eyes, are we?
Was I? Well, no one's trying to ban embryos. What we're trying to figure out here is whether or not these embryos should be destroyed to at least with the promise of saving other lives.
Well, I'm very comfortable with people making a decision based on that issue. I think if people are informed and have the facts about what stem cell research is and what it's not, for example, it's not abortion. We're not talking about anything growing in a woman's uterus. We're talking about cells in a laboratory dish.
That depends on if you define abortion as taking something out of a human woman's uterus or destroying an unborn child.
Well, see, you're playing with labels, and if you're going to play with labels, that's exactly why it's more important for people to understand the facts and get past the label so they can make an informed decision based on the facts.
How long
if
can
people
the...
If people want to consider cells in a laboratory dish abortion, then they can do that. But we shouldn't work backwards and tell them that this is abortion. We should give them the facts.
Let's go to the laboratory dish then. How long can, I'll use my term, the human embryo here be developed under this initiative before embryonic stem cells are extracted?
Right. Well, typically, here's the way it works. The cell and the unfertilized egg are combined in a laboratory dish and are stimulated to begin to replicate. Typically, after about 5 to 7 days, what is called the blastocyst is formed. It's a microscopic ball about the size of the point of a pin. And at that point is when scientists, when the stem cells that are inside that ball are useful, have those unique characteristics, what that's called pluripotency, which means they can be turned into any kind of cell in the human body. And that happens during that 5 to 7 day period.
But how long, according to the initiative, would the researcher be able to develop this embryo?
Sure. The initiative creates an outside boundary of 14 days.
Why?
And that 14 days has become an internationally accepted standard.
Why 14 days?
Well, first of all, I can't tell you. It could have been 12 days. It could be 14. Either one is outside. It provides enough time for the scientists to have the useful stem cells. The 14-day standard comes in a couple of places. You'll find it, for example, with the United Kingdom in England. They put that in, where they promote this research, they put that 14-day limit. The National Academies of Sciences, which is the American body of the most respected scientists in our country, have put in place a comprehensive set of ethical guidelines to guide stem cell research.
But if it's an ethical consideration here, why after 14 days? I mean, if it's simply that they won't be able to get the stem cells, there's no reason for the law to say you can't take stem cells from anything older than 14 days because there wouldn't be stem cells to get. Why does the law being proposed here limit it to 14 days?
That's a good question. And to some extent, these standards are also intended to deal with concerns expressed by those who have even some science fiction kinds of concerns. So those who believe, against any scientific basis, that those cells left in the lab dish for longer could grow into something, this alleviates that concern. Even though those cells will actually deteriorate after 7 or 8 days and become less and less useful. So it's the 5 to 7 day window when that pinpoint size ball has in it these stem cells that have this unique characteristic of being able to regenerate cells in the human body that holds such amazing promise to cure diseases that so many Missouri families suffer from. And, you know, diseases and injuries don't affect just a single individual in a family. Entire families are consumed by these diseases emotionally, physically, financially. And so many of us have seen close up what a disease like this can do to entire families.
I got a couple final questions here I need to ask you before I let you go here,
sure.
Don. How many human embryos are we talking about here? I mean, just ballpark it for me. How many in the course of a year, if the initiative passes in Missouri, are we talking about needed for research?
Oh, I don't have a number for you, but it's not a large number. You know, most of the stem cells come from a different process, which you haven't asked me about, which is the use of these fertilized eggs from fertility clinics, where a couple, a man and a wife, go to a fertility clinic to initiate a pregnancy where they're otherwise infertile. And they end up having leftover fertilized eggs that they're no longer going to use, and they're frozen away. And the couple can make an informed choice to donate those fertilized eggs for medical research. The other option is they'll be thrown away as medical waste. And it's from that source that most stem cells come from.
Well, is the only other option that they'd be thrown away? What about the option of bringing them to term somehow?
Well, there are 400,000 of these frozen fertilized eggs around the country. And there is a program of adoption called the Snowflake Adoption. And I believe that something like 50 or 60 couples have adopted those. And we're all for that. That's wonderful. But in the meantime, there will be hundreds of thousands that will be thrown away as medical waste. And rather than throwing those away, wouldn't it be better to use them to cure disease, to save lives, to alleviate human suffering? It seems to me that that's a much better choice than throwing them away as medical waste.
How would you respond, and maybe this kind of gets to the, and we've got about 30 seconds here, this gets kind of the crux of our conversation here. How would you respond to someone who says, look, I mean, we have people sitting on death row who will, by the force of law, eventually be executed. And since they're going to eventually be executed and be gone, why not use them for biomedical research?
Well, it's a completely unrelated issue because there you're talking about a living, breathing human being. You're not talking about cells in a laboratory dish that are donated willingly and with informed consent by the donors. A completely different issue.
So is it fair to say that the only way someone should be willing to vote for the Missouri Stem Cell Research Initiative is if they are willing to say that the human embryo is just a ball of cells and not, in fact, a human embryo?
No, not at all. People, no matter what their views, could vote for this initiative, because what this initiative does is it ensures that whatever the federal framework is for regulating stem cell research should apply equally to Missourians. So if medical research has historically been regulated at the federal level and applied equally to all 50 states, to vote for this initiative is to say that Missourians should not be treated as second-class citizens. It's to say that Missourians should have the same access to life-saving treatments and cures as anyone else in the country when those cures are found, and to ensure that our institutions in Missouri should be able to be treated on a level playing field with institutions around the country when it comes to seeking those cures and providing those cures. So whatever your view is of the research or any of these issues, if one believes that Missourians should not be treated worse than other Americans, they should vote for the Missouri Stem Cell Initiative.
Don Rubin is president of Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures, the organization sponsoring this statewide initiative, the Missouri Stem Cell Research Initiative. Don, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
When we come back from this break, open lines for your questions and comments, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
There is nothing like the relationship between a mother and her child. Nothing. And that relationship is only surpassed by the relationship between our Heavenly Father and His children in Jesus Christ. These two themes, our earthly mothers and our Heavenly Father, are brought together in a beautifully illustrated children's book. It's our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April. It's called Mommy Promises by Issues Etc. regular guest Julie Stiegelmeyer. Mommy Promises is available from Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. You can also browse before you buy and find the book at our website, issuesetc.org. Mommy Promises is right there on the homepage, issuesetc.org. It's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April, Mommy Promises by Issues Etc. regular guest Julie Stiegelmeyer, 1-800-325-3040.
Have you heard the term unreached people groups? This Global Minute helps you learn the definition and take steps in praying. A people group has both an ethnic and language identity that's shared by all its members, but there are also common customs and family traditions. In India, for example, it's one political country, but some people say there are 3,000 different people groups. Now, as Christians, we need to realize many people groups are unreached with the gospel. That means there's also no church gathering where people go to worship together. Most unreached people groups are found in places like Indonesia, across Central Asia, the Middle East, and North Africa. God delights in answering the prayers of His people. He's able to overcome the cultural and political barriers that exist. Pray more Christians will live their lives so unreached people will embrace the Savior. Learn more about unreached people on the website missionvisionnetwork.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, I urge you in view of God's mercy to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will.
That's nice. Hear that passage or many other passages, and nothing goes off in our minds. So routine, so untransformed. But set that passage against something else, and you may well get a lot to think about. Hear this from Oz Guinness in his book, The Call. In the decades I have followed Jesus, second only to the joy of knowing Him, has been a sorrow at the condition of those of us today who name ourselves His followers. If so many of us profess to live by the gospel, yet are so pathetically marginal to the life of our societies, and so nondescript and inconsequential in our individual lives, is there something wrong with the gospel, or does the problem lie with us? Jesus has not asked us to die for Him, as much as to live for Him, living sacrifices, Romans 12 said. Anything transformative happening in your thoughts? I'm Dale Meyer.
Theology is the art of making distinctions. Theology is made up of two Greek words, theos, meaning God, and logos, meaning word. So theology is words of God, both about God and from God. And that's why theology is so important.
Law and Gospel with Tom Baker, weekday evenings at 6:05 on AM 850 KFUO.
This voter referendum measure will ensure that Missouri patients have access to any stem cell cures that are allowed under federal law. It will ensure that our medical institutions can provide and help develop those cures. And it resolves the cloning issue by banning any attempt to clone a human being.
All right. Welcome back to Issues Etc. That's a little bit of one of the ads that's playing locally and statewide for the Missouri Stem Cell Research Cures Initiative. We just finished our conversation with Don Rubin, president of Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures. I want to hear from you. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We've discussed the subject many times. We get it from the horse's mouth in the last 25 minutes. It's open lines for your reaction to our interview with Don Rubin, president of Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures. Our in-studio email address, it is issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org, and our call-in numbers, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. As this half-hour progresses, I'll share some of my thoughts on the interview with you as well. Was there something I should have asked that I didn't ask? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Up first is Bill, who calls from St. Louis. Hi, Bill. Bill, welcome. All right, let's talk to Derek, who's on the line, also calling from St. Louis. Derek, welcome to Issues Etc.
Good afternoon. Thanks very much for the dialogue on this issue. I know it's complicated and important. I am the father of a child with type 1 diabetes. And so, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, and so obviously it's been with great interest that I've watched the debate over stem cell research and the progress that's been made in this area over the last few years, especially. You made a comment in your interview of Don Rubin about taking a life to save a life, and I just want to say that I certainly do not view that blastocyst, to use that technical term that we heard, the bunch of cells in the dish as being a life, and I think it's wholly appropriate for those cells to be used in a way that can save people's lives, such as saving or at least certainly improving the quality of lives of people such as our son.
Now, Eric, you are aware, of course, that you, me, your son, we were all once that blastocyst, right?
That was a step along the way for us. That's true.
What were you? What was I? What was your son at that stage? Was he a life deserving of protection, or was he just a ball of cells that, if need be, you guys could have done anything you wanted to with?
Well, I think it's a very different setting to be created in a dish with no intention of this turning into a life form, a viable life form, as opposed to that same batch of cells being in a woman's stomach.
Well, you raise two issues there. I mean, first of all, is it our intent that makes the blastocyst an embryo or not an embryo? Derek? Is it our intent that makes the blastocyst an embryo or not, or a life worth protecting versus something that we can do medical research with?
I guess I think that's a subjective question.
Do you have an answer for it?
For me personally, I again, I'm comfortable with the idea that clump of disorganized cells sitting in a dish is not a life form.
Hardly disorganized. It's actually organized into a nice little one-cell thick ball at one end a nice clump of embryonic stem cells. And it's hardly just a disorganized mass of kind of chaos there. We're talking about something that in each and every case, depending on if it was you or me or your child or anyone at all, we passed through that very definite organized stage. I mean, they can recognize it when they look into a microscope. They just don't say, hey, there's a clump of cells, maybe it's a blastocyst. They look at it and they say that has the form, the organization of a blastocyst. The other thing you raised there, of course, Derek, was its location. Doesn't it seem a little risky to you to say where the embryo is determines whether or not it's worthy of our protection? If it's in the Petri dish, we do medical research and destroy the embryo to get its cells. If it's in a woman's womb, then it's worthy of protection. The location, does that determine whether or not this is a life worthy of protection?
Well, again, I'd say it's a subjective question, but I would say to you that for me personally, having thought through those questions, I am comfortable that group of cells in a dish does not constitute the equivalent of a life.
Well, you pretty much have to believe that to support this initiative, don't you? I mean, if you, to be honest, Derek, if you believed it was a life worthy of protecting, you couldn't support this initiative, could you?
I can't look at it that way. I can simply say that different people are going to come to their conclusions, but that's how I've ended up on this issue.
But if you believed that the human embryo, that this was a human embryo and not just a clump of cells and worthy of protection, could you support the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures and its initiative?
Well, as I said, I don't believe in the idea of taking life to save a life. But again, I am comfortable that this does not constitute that.
So if this were a human embryo, would you still favor embryonic stem cell research to cure your son of juvenile diabetes, if it were in fact a human embryo, and it could be demonstrated beyond a shadow of a doubt that it is, would you still support embryonic stem cell research?
I do support – so let's get away from the term of embryo, and I'll say that I also support the use of fertilized embryos from in vitro fertilization clinics.
But my question is particularly about the embryo. If it is an embryo, would you still support embryonic stem cell research to cure your son?
And how do you use the term embryo?
One of the earliest stages of human life. This is the stage which we all passed through after fertilization. This is who we all were. It is small. It is microscopic. It is of very simple organization, but it is in fact the earliest stage of human life.
Well, and again, I'll say that. Use of a term embryo or not, what I'm comfortable with is the idea that blastocyst, that group of cells at that early point that is envisioned, is something that I'm comfortable with its use for the purpose of creating life-saving cures for people with diabetes or paralysis or Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease, any number of things.
All right, Derek, thank you very much. You will notice in our conversation with Don Rubin and in that conversation with Derek as well, nobody wants to talk about the embryo. Bring him up. Come on, let's not talk about the embryo. Let's get away from the subject of the embryo. You call it an embryo. I don't see it that way. What if it were? I don't want to think about it that way. Almost a meticulous avoidance of the embryo, which really is the whole issue here. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Everybody wants cures. I've known a number of children and people who grow into an adulthood with juvenile diabetes. And everybody wants a cure. The question is, what are we willing to do? Or, in the cases of some, what are we willing to not see in order to see it get done? Is this just semantics? You say tomato, I say tomato. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Up next, John calls from St. Louis. John, welcome. John, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
A couple of points. When you talk about embryos, and one of the things that I noticed in the discussions earlier with your guest is there was some discussion relative to labels, and I think that labels are, in fact, very important, and the facts behind them are very important. So when you talk about, you know, embryo in a generic sense, it seems to me it's akin to looking at a tissue and calling it a Kleenex, even though it may be a different brand. We generically label things sometimes. There is a difference between an embryo and a pre-embryo.
Now, wait a minute. What's a pre-embryo?
A pre-embryo is that clump of cells that has not been implanted yet into a woman's womb. Once it implants and it has the opportunity to become a human being, then you have reached a different level.
And what's your basis for making this distinction between embryo and pre-embryo?
Well, one of the things that occurs in nature, you're probably familiar with the fact that most fertile women who are sexually active at some point in their lives experience what constitutes a heavy flow in a menstrual period. Quite often, this is actually a fertilized egg that is not implanted, that is just being expelled from the body.
But what I'm asking is,
if you believe that those are worthy of protection, then we have a whole different box that's being opened here in that Do we have to then trap the menstrual material and remove the fertilized egg and somehow reimplant that into another woman and make it grow?
So
I happen to believe that we don't. But that, and I think that for me is what distinguishes the embryo from the pre-embryo. And I think if you speak with most gynecologists, they will confirm this. That's actually not the reason I called in.
Well, make it quick because we got other people on the line.
More of an interest in sharing with you a piece of information that I received because I had a real interest in trying to get my arms around the issue of SCNT. So I went out and asked a few people, and I got a very interesting response. And I will preface this by saying the response that I got did not come from a cell biologist, nor did it come from a physician, but it came from a biochemist PhD candidate. And it's pretty interesting. He said, first you have to recognize a couple of definitions. There are germ cells, which are reproductive cells.
You need to cut to the chase here because we've got a lot of people waiting here on the line.
Okay. His point was that somatic cell nuclear transfer technically does not even create an embryo. It creates a pseudoblastocyst, and that pseudoblastocyst has genetic material that is matched to the genetic donor.
All right, thank you very much for the call. It is amazing to me, and I chuckle, and meaning no disrespect to the caller, but it is amazing to me. We will make up new words, pre-embryo and pseudoblastocyst, to talk about something that under it, I defy them. I defy them. If I could get a hold of a cloned embryo, I'll just use the term that is most accurate, put it under a microscope and show it, one, the product of human cloning, the other, the product of natural fertilization, and have them compare the two to show me any difference between the two. These aren't medical terms that are being bandied about to avoid the term embryo. These are political terms. Here's just a little bit I'd like to read to you. This comes from Wright Silver. Yeah, I got to read this. He says in the book called Remaking Eden, I'll let you in on a little secret. The term pre-embryo has been embraced wholeheartedly by the in vitro fertilization practitioners for reasons that are political, not scientific. The new term is used to provide the illusion that there is something profoundly different between a six-day-old embryo and a six-day-old embryo. End of quote. I think that says it all there. Mark's calling from his car. Thanks for waiting, Mark.
Hi, Pastor. One issue that I've heard, I'm pretty sure, as you've discussed this topic before that didn't come up this time, is the supply of eggs that would be necessary for widespread use of this as a cure.
Yeah, we...
I was wondering if you remembered some of the statistics or just... that you've talked about before.
Well, one of the questions I did ask in the Rubin interview there was, how many embryos are we talking about? And he didn't answer that question either. He said, it's going to be relatively few, which makes one wonder why they need so much darn money to do it.
Am I right that, let's say, the gentleman who called whose son has type 1 diabetes, that there would be at least one egg needed for his son?
Well, and that egg would have to come from a woman. And it, as we learned with Dolly the sheep, just getting the clone requires enough eggs. And we're talking about a lot of failed attempts there. So just the amount of eggs needed to do 100, let's say a safe estimate, 10 million people in the United States suffering some kind of diabetes. I'm just pulling a figure out of the air. And for every one of them, a large number of eggs. Do the math. Where are they coming from? Where are those eggs coming from? Now, I will caution against the so many eggs argument. And this came from Dr. Hurlbut when we talked with him on the show at some time back from the President's Council on Bioethics. He said it is very likely in the very near future the whole egg dilemma is going to be solved. And these things will be done not with donated eggs, but with other types of cells, body cells. And so it is very likely that argument, how many eggs will we need, which is a good argument now, will simply disappear in due time. Patty calls from her car. Patty, welcome.
Hi. I was calling, why don't we go into adult stem cells. Instead of worrying about this embryonic stem cells, because if you can use your own stem cells and your body doesn't reject that, is my understanding.
Well, it's a great question. I'll tell you why. At least there's not this strong push for voter-backed adult stem cells. There's already private money, lots of private money for adult stem cells. There isn't private money for embryonic stem cells. And you want to know why? Because it's a free market, and people don't see it as, in spite of all the promises that are made, people, the smart money says it hasn't produced anything. So why don't I put my money where it's going to produce something like adult stem cells? And this is why there's the big push, Patty, for federal money for embryonic stem cell research, because the private money isn't coming in. Paul Cole's from his car. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Todd. A couple things. Just wanted to say to the persons who continue to insist on this distinctions of the embryo pre and post implantation, there needs to be a real justification for it. And often it seems to me that it arises often out of whole cloth, out of a need of an apologetic to deal with their own mm-hmm. worldview or the ends that they're trying to accomplish. And frankly, at least implicit in what I keep hearing over and over again, particularly in this gentleman, is a rather strong sense of utilitarianism. And it's so clear to me that, you know, it just ding, 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 the whole time this man's talking, I'm hearing that. But anyway, I think he did a good job in fielding his rhetoric and so forth and asking questions. But even though it's not the normal way in which the issues, et cetera, is done, just a suggestion, it would be nice to perhaps in the future have this gentleman back and have him on his toes a little bit and have him engage someone like a Wesley Smith or a Scott Klusendorf and let's see just how well he actually can defend his position then.
Well, I have no doubt about how that would go, but I can tell you this. You will note in the course of our conversation with Don Rubin, when Wilkin talked about the embryo, he talked about the people with diseases. It's very simple to see where these conversations go. When Wilkin wants to talk about who is the embryo, he wants to talk about the kids with diabetes. Jack calls from his car. Hi, Jack.
Hello, Todd. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to address this conversation sounds eerily familiar to me. I was a teenager and in college during the 70s when the abortion debate was going on. And the promises were for a society with no abused children, for no unwanted children, for removal of poverty. And these promises that are being made about what research will bring really echo that. And I think any time we're going to sacrifice one human life to better the life another, we're in a lot of trouble. So that's my comment.
All right,
there.
Thank you very much. Sounds like you're listening to the conversation loud and clear. Sally calls from her car. Hi, Sally.
Hey, Todd. I saw last night on the news they had a little snippet of where kids with diseased bladders, they've done a procedure where they extract two healthy cells, put them on a form, and put a growth medium on it, and they've grown completely autogenic new bladder. And then it was implanted. There's no rejection issues. And they said they're probably 5 to 10 years away for doing other organs, hearts, livers, et cetera. So I think this will help the whole embryonic stem cell stuff go by the wayside. I also agree with your last caller. He was saying about the 70s, and it was supposed to eliminate all these problems. And think about how much worse child abuse and these issues are. It'd be kind of the same Pandora's box. What it says it's going to deliver actually causes more of the same problem.
Thank you very much, Sal. That's what my grandma used to call buying a pig in a poke. Jane calls from Arnold. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Todd. I just wonder why he's calling it embryonic stem cell research when he says it's, you know, not yet an embryo. And also, for the dear man with his son with diabetes, if he would do some research on the internet and see how adult cells could work and get informed on that, I think it would clear him up. I really do feel for him, but we've got to do it the right way. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Jane. Thank you very much. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Melissa is calling from St. Louis. Hi, Melissa.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. You know, I just wanted to make a comment. I haven't really heard a mother's perspective. I've heard women callers and I've heard men callers, but I kind of have a situation to share with you in that right now I am totally blessed with two healthy children. But I have kind of resolved my stance with this situation this way. I am done with my childbearing years. Each month when I have my monthly cycle, you know, any egg that would have the potential to be a human life, would it be fertilized by my husband's sperm, goes out with all of the other waste in my body because we are no longer looking to parent any more children. God forbid something one day would happen to my children. My oldest daughter is an active one, and God forbid she get injured at school and have a spinal cord injury and be paralyzed. And, you know, I have, you know, the possibility of a doctor telling me, well, you know, Melissa, you could donate one of those eggs that you're not using anymore, and what we do is we take all of your identification stuff out of this egg. We hollow it out, take out your nucleus, and we take a simple skin cell from your daughter, and we take the nucleus out of that skin cell, and we put it in your egg. Then we're going to take that egg, and we're going to put it in a petri dish, and we're going to trick it, or we're actually going to treat it, and it's going to be tricked into believing that it is somehow a fertilized embryo. Now, when you look at this under a microscope, I heard you mention earlier about cloned human embryos looking exactly like embryos made the old-fashioned way of being fertilized. That's true, but a cloned human embryo also looks like a cloned rat embryo and a mouse embryo. They all look the same. You cannot distinguish a human embryo from any other embryo.
But so, genetically, they're quite different, Melissa.
Okay, but looking at it under a microscope, you can't tell the difference. But this doctor is telling me that after I've reached the few-day period, they can take the cells within this egg that they've taken from me and this nucleus they've taken from my daughter. They can harvest these stem cells, and they can implant this into her spine, and
seconds. We're going to a break.
That she has a very big chance of walking again. I just hope that folks will at least vote and allow that to be my decision and not legislate their own beliefs.
Well, Melissa, the only way you can do that is by discounting the human life created in that petri dish from your egg. That's the only way you'll be able to do it. I'll just say it. Look, folks, if you're going to vote for it, the only way you can vote for this is by saying the human embryo isn't a human life worthy of protecting. It's what you were. It's what I was. It's what Melissa was. It's what Melissa's daughter was. All in that same stage. My thoughts after this break, and then we'll talk with Pastor David Peterson about baptism.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.